Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is episode 411 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abul Samet from Telemetry.
And I'm Nicole Wakelin from Top Speed.
And I'm Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
And what's been going on with you guys this week? Anything interesting?
Nothing fun or exciting.
My band had a show.
Yeah? Which one? Yeah. Which band? We did in like 72 bands,
That's true.
Right?
It was an LCD sound system night. We played with the Daft Punk DJ. Ooh. And when we got to the club, they were putting up a big wall, like a big video wall for the Daft Punk. And we've done this show before with this DJ. And typically they put the wall about 3/4 of the way back. And then they put a table behind it for the DJ, and then we just set up around it. It's fine. It's a pretty big stage. It's not that big. When we got there, the stage was right at the edge of the stage. The video wall was right at the edge of the stage. So we had to sit up behind it, and the stage has a peek hole to look through. So he's like, it looked like we were in a booth, and you couldn't see the guitarist or the drummer or the... The percussionist.
Sounds a little crazy.
That's a little weird.
It was a weird night, but it was fine. People had fun.
Awesome. All right. Well, let us begin. Nicole?
Yes, sir.
Have you been driving?
I have been driving. We're going to read the whole title again. The 2025 Mitsubishi Outlander SEL 2.5 SAWC. That's what it literally says when I'm running, which is basically... The second to the top trim of the Mitsubishi Outlander with a two, which is, I don't know why they put 2.5, because there is a hybrid, but like, unless you're getting the hybrid, this is the engine you have. So it's kind of, I felt like just say PHEV on the other one or something. Anyway, so that is what I am driving this week. I got to drive it quite a bit too. The first thing I noticed, you know, I got the car and then I immediately had to take off for the airport. So I hadn't really had a chance to look at it yet, so I hadn't played around with it. I didn't realize it was three rows. I thought it was just two because it looks so short. And then I opened the trunk or the tailgate to put my bag in the back. How is this three rows?
To be fair, it should not be a three-row vehicle. It should not have a third row.
So I have, and I think you guys have probably seen it, I have a roller bag carry-on that's not even a full rectangle. It's a square, people. It's smaller than normal. I can shove it under the seat in front of me. It is that small. When I went to put it in the car initially, it was hitting the tailgate, standing up on its edge. The tailgate was coming down and hitting the top of the suitcase, as small as it was. So I had to fold the seats down to lay it flat to make sure that it would actually fit. It's like 10 cubic feet of space, I think it was back there. It's not a lot.
I think that might be exaggerating a little
right?
bit.
Right? It's tiny. And that's what's behind the rear seats, but the third row. But when you look at the actual third row, which seats two people, I did not crawl back there because I feel like the contortionists and sitting back there, I mean, Robbie would just be curled up like a giant pretzel. I don't think
like a
Robbie,
little shrimp.
He'd just be curled in a little ball. So
ready for some sort of cocktail sauce dipping.
Exactly. We could just throw some back there. So it is a three-row SUV just barely. I feel like if you're putting anyone in that last row...
I mean, you can make three rows in the Ioniq 5 if you want.
If you're really ambitious.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has three rows.
Mm-hmm.
But the third row should not ever be used. You should just fold it down.
Yes.
Leave it there.
Yes.
Never touch it again.
Absolutely. And if you do choose to put humans back there before you do this, it should be, you should be apologizing profusely, or it must, it has to be like, okay, it's a zombie apocalypse. Either squish yourselves in that third row or die. Then it's worth squishing in the third row. Otherwise,
fair enough.
Yeah, no way. So very, very tiny third row. That said, the second row is comfy. The first row is comfy. Those are nice and roomy. It's not like the whole thing is sort of like compact size. It's just that they wedge that third row in there. Pricing on this one. Now, this is, there's one, two, three, four, five, six trims. If I, oh, because they do broke it out, front wheel drive and all wheel drive. So there's really four trims. So the it's the ES, the SE, the SEL that I drove, and the Platinum. So I'm one step from the very top of the lineup. This one was $44,675. It had a couple little additions, but nothing much. What do you think the destination was?
$1,200.
$1,495.
Wow, on the money, Sam. Exactly $1,495. So kind of a high destination fee. When you look at that pricing, though, you know, $45,000 isn't outrageous for an SUV, nor is it outrageous for a three-row SUV. But,
well,
you know,
let's step back from that statement a little bit. Okay. It is not substantially more expensive than the competition, which is not to say that it's not outrageous.
Yeah.
It just means that the entire market is outrageous.
That's I guess fair to say. It's everything is crazy right now, but I don't feel like this one is more crazy than the rest of them. And because it is the almost the top trim, you get a lot of features. Like there's heated and ventilated seats, and there's quilted leather. It looks very nice. There was a moment in time where Mitsubishis looked really bad. Like there was in a couple of them that just looked awful, and you drive it and you vaguely felt like parts were going to kind of fall off because the noise, the NVH noise vibration and harshness was so bad. It was like, it was one of the few cars it was early on and I can't remember which Mitsubishi it was, but I thought, I'm not driving this down. We had some road trip. I'm like, we're taking our own car because I can't drive this. This is just, no, I don't trust this. And it was brand new. Not the case now. This is a sturdy car. It feels nice inside. It's relatively quiet. For an engine, it's a 2.5 liter four cylinder, 181 horsepower, 181 pound feet of torque. Not especially powerful. And it has a CVT. You sometimes, if you mash that gas pedal, you know there's a CVT. You can sort of hear a little bit of that whine to it. So it's not the best handling car or SUV out there. Once you get up to speed, it's just fine on the highway. It was very comfortable. I had to make a couple trips back and forth into Boston in this thing, and it was a very comfortable SUV. Tow rating is not super high. It's like 2,000 pounds. The thing with this is for this, it does what it's supposed to do. It has room for seven. It has three rows. It has the extra features.
Seven.
Yeah, I know. Air quotes.
It has seven seat belts.
It has seven seat belts.
It has room for one, two, four, five, and then one person laying down in the back.
Exactly. But still, I mean, it's fine, but I just don't feel like, you know, with how small that third row is, with how little cargo room there is behind it, the sort of like, okay, fine, but nothing special acceleration and handling, I wouldn't not recommend it, but I feel like you can do better. Like, I hate to knock a car. And it's not that it's a bad car. It's not that it's a bad vehicle. It's just against some really serious competition. Like, this is a crowded segment. There are SUVs and crossovers galore. So in a segment where there are so many options, would this be the option you would pick, Sam?
Not in this form.
Yeah.
I mean, this vehicle shares its platform with the current generation Nissan Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is effectively the same vehicle as the Rogue.
And the Rogue is just two rows. They don't do a third row in the Rogue.
And actually, back in the mid-2010s, Nissan did offer the Rogue with three rows.
Yep.
And I remember having one to review back around 2014 or 15. And looking at this thing, it's like, why did they even bother with this? This is
a
complete waste of space and adds cost, mm-hmm. adds complexity, adds weight, and serves no useful purpose.
And I think they got – did they even have it? It was a really short-lived thing. And I think the naming change was like there was the Rogue – Then there was the Rogue XL. And then there were, like, they did some naming stuff in there that just to make it super confusing when they had the third row.
Yeah.
But that third row was not
around for very long. They dropped it after about 3 years, I think.
Yeah, it didn't last long because I'm sure most people were looking inside and saying, that is not a three row.
and this, you know, this current generation one, you know, they didn't bother to offer the third row in the Rogue, at least in North America. They may offer it, I think, you know, overseas.
Oh, yeah?
Where it's called the X-Trail.
Okay.
I think you can get it with the third row option, which, again, I think is not useful.
Yeah.
You know, but the design of this of the Outlander versus the Rogue, I actually kind of like this better than the Rogue.
I do like the styling of it. Like I was saying, all the inside of it, like it's almost kind of a shame. It's like, guys, just get rid of the third row and stop pretending. Just make it a two-row SUV, and it's more solid in that guise. And like that would reduce the weight and probably make that 181 horsepower a little bit more robust when you lose the mechanisms for that third row of seats. Seats are heavy. But the interior, I mean, it has a very premium interior. Like I said, there's the, you know, the heated and ventilated seats, and you've got, you know, dual zone automatic climate control, and it has a nice big, I think it's like a 12.3 inch infotainment screen. There's a standard 8-speaker audio system Yamaha on some of the trims. It's a 12-speaker on the one I was driving. You get plenty of charging ports. You know, it has a lot of great features. Like feature wise, it's a very feature rich vehicle for the price. I think on features, on style, on design, on comfort, it does a great job for the price. It's just that the third row is not really usable. And the power, it's underpowered for how heavy it is, I guess. If it got rid of those two things, and getting rid of that third row would fix one thing and help fix the other.
You just keep it folded down forever. I mean, to be honest, most third rows are completely worthless.
But this one, like, you know, like Robbie,
it's extra worthless.
There's some that you can get into the third row, and you're not thinking, this is where I'd like to spend 8 hours, but you can get back there. Have you ever crawled into the third row of the Outlander or attempted to?
I typically look and I'm like, no, I just don't even bother because, again, most third rows are sort of worthless.
They are.
It's just sort of like you look at it, you're like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, if I had to, I would sit. It's like the second row of the BRZ.
Yeah.
that those seats back there are completely worthless. They're of no use to any human ever.
Yep.
I guess you might be able to get two very tiny people, like one of the passenger seats, like scooched already forward, and one in the back seat. And when I say tiny people, I mean toddlers. If you could get like two two toddlers could ride around in the BRZ.
Yeah.
Like I'm trying. I'm like I occasionally will look up like conversion kits just to remove that, just to make it into to remove the seats and make it into what do you call it, storage? Because why are they there?
I would fold the seats in this Outlander and never unfold them because there'd be no reason to. And then like that, even once you do that, there's. That I'm just brought up the cargo specs. So it's 10.9 behind the third row, 30.2 behind the second, and 64.3 behind the first. So 30.2 serviceable. 64.
Yeah, that's the 30 cubic feet is
right?
You know, very competitive and, you know, probably slightly better than most of the other crossovers in this segment.
So it's
most
weird.
Of them are in that 26 to 28 cubic feet.
It's an odd duck for me. So that's why I have a hard time with it. I feel like it could do more than it does. Could do better.
You know what, the one I actually prefer is the plug-in hybrid, the Outlander plug-in hybrid.
That is quite good.
That has
that
a lot
too.
More performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the current generation one will go something like 30 miles on a charge.
So that's not bad.
It's much better than the first generation.
Yeah. No, I like the PHEV much better than the gas engines.
Yeah.
And it's been a while, but I remember liking it as a PHEV.
So at the end of the day, just get the PHEV.
Yeah.
Just get the PHEV, people.
The funny thing about the plug-in Outlander is it actually has DC fast charging, quote unquote, but it has a CHAdeMO port. So it's got a J1772 port for AC charging at home. And then it has a CHAdeMO port. It's one of only two vehicles ever sold in the U.S. market with a CHAdeMO port, the other one
was
being
the
Nissan
Leaf. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Okay. And but the thing is, the CHAdeMO port only charges at 20 kilowatts. So
Which is pretty quick, to be honest, for a PHEV. But you also got to find the one CHAdeMO port at every, like, EA or EVgo station.
Yeah. Well, and
it's always being used by somebody else because they're charging their regular EV with it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a plug-in hybrid. So, I mean, do you, you know, if you're doing a road trip, do you really need to stop, you know, for half an hour to charge up that battery?
Yeah. So it's just looking to see how, what you pay.
You'll still get decent mileage.
The base trims, this is a pretty significant, I think-ish, price jump, though. The base trim.
How much was the one you drove?
So I'm looking at just base trim to base trim. This one, the ES with front-wheel drive, is $29,600. So but if you go with the base trim of the PHEV, $40,445.
Yeah, but all of the plug-ins are all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, so like the SEL,
that's still plug-in hybrid. The ES all-wheel drive is $31,000, and so that's with a gas engine, and so
about $9,000.
Yeah, it's a big chunk more.
So the SEL plug-in is $46,400. Yeah, and how much was the one you just drove?
Mine was $44,600. It had about $5,000 of extra equipment on there. So it's the MSRP on this would be $38,000 and change without destination. Okay.
So yeah, it's about $9,000 extra.
Yeah.
But you know, if you have some place to plug it in, you get better performance.
Mm-hmm.
If you can plug it in daily, then you can pretty much do all your daily driving without ever using any gas or using almost no gas. And then when you need to take a road trip, you can still, you know, just keep on driving as a hybrid.
Exactly. I mean, if you can afford the added cost, I would go, and you're looking at the Outlander, I'd go with the PHEV for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, if you get one before, well, no, actually, never mind. I was going to say, if you get one before the end of September, but it doesn't actually qualify because it's not built in the U.S. It's built in Japan.
Oh. So it doesn't matter. Never mind. Whenever you want.
Yeah.
Ignore.
Me. Yeah. So that's the Mitsubishi Outlander.
All right. Did you have anything, Robbie?
No, I got to call some stuff in.
Okay.
I have to figure out how we're adjusting a little bit how we cover things on automotive engineering, which is part of SAE that I work. You should go to SAE Automotive Engineering. Look it up, read all the fun, nerdy content. So I want to figure out how we're going to cover cars on that before I start getting. I get cars for the podcast, obviously, it's up, but I got a lot of balls in the air, is what I'm saying. I got to give it the beans.
All right.
All the other old-timey things that I'm going to say.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's Frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new Frosty Swirls and Frosty Fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to Frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC, used with permission.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. That's shop.wheelbearings.media.
Well, I had a very colorful week in my driveway. I actually, due to some scheduling things between two different fleet companies, I ended up with two cars at the same time again. And
I should just go to your house and pick up one.
There you go. Just drive it back to California and bring it back when you're done. So it was a very colorful week. At two car, you know, as as you know, I often complain that there are far too many monochromatic cars on the road, too many grays and silvers and whites and blacks. I got a Volvo EX30 in moss yellow.
Oh, gosh, that's bright.
And yeah. A Jeep Gladiator Willys in orange, which is a very, very orange car or truck.
It can't just be called orange. Is it really called orange?
No, I'm trying to remember.
I'm Googling. So
what did they call this orange? It's juice exterior paint.
Juice. Okay.
But it's spelled juice. Like J-O-O-S-E.
Of course it's spelled differently than normal because you
like
can just
fruit
spell
loops,
it like juice.
Like is that spelled like fruit?
Yeah.
So which you like better color-wise, the moss yellow, the Volvo, or the juice of the Jeep?
I like them both.
Or the juice.
I would probably go with the yellow.
You would?
Yeah. I like the yellow.
You like the yellow? Okay.
Yeah. And to be fair, I prefer driving the EX30. So let me start with the Jeep. The Gladiator is basically a longer wheelbase Wrangler with a pickup bed attached to the back. And the Willys is based on the Sport. It's like one of the lower trim levels, so it is nominally more affordable. One of the complaints about the Gladiator ever since it came out, what, 5-6 years ago now, has been that it's kind of expensive. And it's still kind of expensive, although they have lowered the price a little bit in the past year. But it's still pretty expensive. So the one that I had was the Willys trim, and that means it gets a couple. It's sort of it's got some off road oriented stuff on there. I mean, all Wranglers and Gladiators are pretty off road capable, even base models. Although as you go up the lineup, they get more capable. So this one has a locking rear diff. It has some Firestone Destination mud terrain tires, not just all terrain tires, but mud terrain tires. They're a 32-inch diameter, so it gives it a little more ground clearance. It's got a couple of skid plates underneath there to protect the fuel tank and the transfer case. And then when you climb inside, it's basically identical to being in a Wrangler. So if you've been in a Wrangler, in a four-door Wrangler, it's essentially the same experience. The Willys has a retractable soft top. So there's two clamps at the windshield header. You unclamp, you release those, and then basically you have to stand up. It's not like being in a Miata where you just unclamp it from the windshield header and flip it back over your shoulder. Because this is a two-row, four-seat vehicle, that roof is pretty long, so you actually have to get up and flip it back, you know, and it actually takes a little bit of effort to fold it all the way back. It's a lot easier than, you know, if you have a hard top or, you know, if you have a soft top four-door Wrangler, you know, those can be kind of fiddly to take all the pieces off if you want to do open air driving. So this is fairly straightforward, and it's pretty easy, again, you know, to close it up. You know, if it starts raining on you, you know, you'll have to pull over and get up and reach back to pull it up, but it's easy to hook back up again. But the rest of the experience is very much like driving a Wrangler, which means that the ride quality is not great. It's kind of noisy. It's kind of cramped. You know, it's narrow. You know, compared to a Bronco, the Wrangler has and Gladiator have a narrower body. If you're not watching the video, Robbie's kind of waving back and forth, tossing his head the way you would if you're actually riding down.
I'm going to tell you, this is me with the Wrangler. A, up until the current generation, I've told everyone, do not buy a Wrangler. Mm-hmm. Also me, I would love to have a Wrangler without a top. I know they're up until the current generation, they're pretty bad. But I would still be like, I still in my heart, because my uncle had one when I was a little kid and the doors were off and it's like all the things. I don't need any of the electronics. I don't need anything. But I would still love a Wrangler. I've had friends who the brakes just like failed on their Wrangler and they drove off into a field. They weren't even off-roading. They were on the road. I have a cousin who had a Wrangler. His children were terrified of driving it.
Oh God.
And still, again, up until the current generation, not great. Not great at all. And I would still be like, what is that, 15-year-old Wrangler? Wonder how much they want for it.
Right? I guess it's a terrible idea.
It's
can
horrible.
I afford it?
It's a bad.
Can
it's like Harley it? Davidsons. Like I don't like Harley. I wouldn't buy a Harley Davidson. But people, I think I know people who ride motorcycles and would love a Harley Davidson, knowing that it's a Harley Davidson. But they're just like, I can't help myself.
Mm-hmm. The current generation is substantially improved from the previous generation.
So much better.
It still has solid axles front and rear, which is great if you're off roading. But, 95% of Jeep owners never go off-road. I would say I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say 5%, take them off-road, which is probably about 4.5% more than most other off-roaders. The only engine available in the Gladiator is the 3.6-liter Pentastar, which is a good engine. But, this is a fairly heavy vehicle, so it's not exactly, great performance. There is a plug-in hybrid that's supposed to be coming for 2026. We'll see. I'll see if that actually arrives. But in the cab, it's, compared to any other midsize pickup truck, it does feel tight in there. Compared to a Ranger or Colorado or even a Tacoma, which is one of the smaller ones, it feels snug in there. The body is narrow, because you've got those wide fenders and the relatively narrow body on these things. It's not a great user experience. But people buy them.
Every time I drive one of them, this is awesome. Get jostled around.
So cool. Ouch.
Wind noise. I got to yell at my passenger, aren't you having the best time? Staring.
The Gladiator I had the optional $995 trifold tonneau cover on it. I was doing a bunch of trimming. We've got this massive bush on the side of – actually, it's more like a cluster of multiple bushes with – that had a lilac in the middle of it, and then a whole bunch of other stuff that over the years has sprung up around it. And so I've been cutting down all of the other stuff except for the lilac, and I wanted to If I want to put this out for curbside collection, I have to cut it all up and bundle it up or bag it up, for the weekly curbside yard waste pickup. Or I can just load it up into a vehicle and take it out to the township compost site and just dump it out, which is what I did with a couple of loads of this stuff last week. The bed... compared to the bed of any other midsize pickup truck. And that's what this is, a midsize, so it's in the same class with Ranger and Colorado and Tacoma and Frontier. The bed is kind of small. It's kind of short. It's kind of shallow. And so it limits how much stuff you can load in the back there. So it's not all that useful as a truck. It's not all that great to drive, no more so than... it's no better and no worse than a Wrangler.
Yep.
But if you open up the top, drive with the top open, take the doors off, it's a unique experience that you're not going to get with any other vehicle. Certainly not with any other pickup truck. There's no other pickup truck on the market that you can fold the top down, take the doors off, and theoretically even fold down the windshield. You can still fold down the windshield on these things. I'm not sure why you would want to do that.
Because you enjoy a face full of bugs? I don't know.
Yeah.
I enjoy bugs. Sweet. That's the protein of the future, people. Bugs. Get ready now.
Back when the current generation JL Wranglers first came out, the first time I had one to review, I actually went to the effort of taking off the doors at least the front doors, just to see what the experience was like driving around town with the doors off in these things.
And
first of all, the thing you have to remember is the mirrors are, unlike a Bronco, where the mirrors are actually mounted on the fenders, on the Wrangler and the Gladiator, the mirrors are mounted on the doors. So when you take off the doors, you have no outside mirrors. Now, you can go to, you know, to Mopar and lots of other places, and there's aftermarket mirror kits you can buy that mount on the fenders. And if you're going to drive one of these things around with the doors off, you should probably do that. But mirrors are not. The other thing, because of the way this thing is shaped, when you drive with the doors off, the wind turbulence coming around that flat windshield is unlike anything I've ever experienced in any other vehicle. So even with the windshield up, if you take the doors off, I mean, it's just the air blowing around you. It's like being in a wind tunnel. It's crazy. You know, if you've ever seen one of those Japanese game shows, you know, where you got people in this like air tube, you know, and there's cash, you know, they turn on the fan and there's cash floating around. You have like 60 seconds to grab as much cash as you can. That's what it's like sitting in one of these things with the doors off at 30 miles an hour. So it's a unique experience. The one that I was driving had optional rock rails and some other stuff as well. So if you are going to take it off road, you know, it's got some protection there. But it's it's a Jeep, you know, for all that is good and bad. If you like Jeeps and you want one with a bed, Jeep's got you covered with the Gladiator. Let's see. Let me find the tab with the Monroney here. So the total cost, the Gladiator starts at $38,100. The Willys starts at about $46,000. The one that I drove was $55,320.
Wow.
And this is not even a high-end. This is not a Rubicon. You can easily get these things up, you know, closing in on 70 grand.
I was looking, as you're talking, there are, because I know there's so many trims, there are 9 different trims of this listed on Jeep's website, with the Sport starting at 38 and the Mojave X at 61,000. Talk about a range of trims. This thing can get crazy expensive.
Oh, yeah. So, guesses on the destination charge?
Oh, it's the Lantis, so 19.
I'm going to go 18.
Robbie's got it. It's 1995.
Wow, was it really? Gosh. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, this one had it had the $7,100 customer preferred package 24W, which gets you the locking rear differential, sun visors with illuminated vanity mirrors, which apparently are not standard on these things. The Willys suspension, the 17-inch wheels, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And you even get the Willys hood decal as part of that package for $7,100. So, and a convenience group for $2,100. It just goes on and on. It's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. It makes it very expensive.
Yeah. The other colorful car that I had was the Volvo EX30 Twin Motor Performance Ultra. So this is the small Volvo. It's electric, as the EX name implies. And when they first announced this thing a couple of years back, and it was briefly on the list of finalists for the North American Car, Truck, and Utility of the Year until they delayed the launch because of tariffs on Chinese-built EVs and other stuff, it was originally supposed to start at $37,000 for the rear-wheel drive model. You cannot get these for $37,000 in the United States anymore. It's considerably more expensive. The twin motor Performance Ultra that I drove came to $48,395. This is a compact car. It's a compact hatchback. I actually really like the size. I think the size is really good. The back seat is not huge, but I can sit behind myself in the back seat, and have decent headroom It's, you know, a little tight on the knees, but, you know, I don't have to straddle the front seat to fit in there. I can get in behind myself. The twin motor has 422 horsepower, 400 pounds feet of torque, which means this is a seriously quick car. It'll do 0 to 60 in about 3.7 seconds. Considering it has Performance Ultra in the name, that's good. Then things start to go downhill. Let me finish with the stuff I like. I like the materials that they've used inside. You know, they did a lot of interesting stuff to try to make this car more sustainable, keep the cost down. So there's some interesting materials that they use on the dashboard, a lot of recycled fibers and things like that. The seats are the wool seats, partially recycled wool seats that Volvo has on some of their other cars, which I really like that fabric. I think it looks really good, feels good, it's comfortable. As you look around, you see they've really minimized. It's a very minimalist design. So there's no instrument cluster in front of the driver. The doors are kind of scalloped out, and there's basically you have an armrest and a release, door handle. That's it. That's all that's on the doors. On the center console, you have window switches. You have two window switches, despite the fact that there are four windows. So you have another toggle to go between front and rear windows. Bad idea. Stop doing that nonsense. There's lots of storage space underneath in the console. There's a very nice, down at the bottom of the center stack, there's a very nice spot where you can put your phone in there and charge it wirelessly, and it holds your phone in place, which is good. That works really well. But there's no other physical controls except on the steering wheel. You've got some touch controls there. Everything else is in the 11-inch center touchscreen. 12-inch. It's 12-inch center touchscreen. There are manual vents. It does have manual vents. So there is that. But if you want to change the temperature or change fan speeds or go between, manual and automatic climate control, you got to do all that in the thing. If you want to see where what your speed is, you got to look over at the center touchscreen. If you want to do literally anything else with this vehicle, you're looking at the center touchscreen. And one of the features that this car has, it has an infrared driver monitor camera on the top of the steering column, even though this car does not have a hands-free driving system. It wants to make sure that you're paying attention and, paying attention to the road. The result of that is that unless you go in and turn that off, which you can do in the settings, you very frequently get alerts on the center touchscreen to, hey, focus on the road, please. Focus on the road. Because every time you want to do something, you have to look away from the road over towards that center touchscreen to do it. And then it's constantly remind you, stop looking at me. Look at the road. That's kind of annoying. I didn't like that so much. When I first got a chance to drive it, I spent like 45 minutes with the car just driving around Los Angeles. And didn't really delve into that stuff very much. I was just kind of getting into the basics, the driving dynamics, and didn't spend time doing any of the usual stuff that you do with a car that you drive on a daily basis. Over the course of a week, that stuff got a lot more annoying. One thing I did notice, I was coming back from an event, and I yawned. And the thing said, oh, hey, seems like you might be tired. You might want to stop and take a rest. So it will actually detect the driver yawning. So it's not just looking for where your eyes are. It's also looking at other stuff, other characteristics about you. And I tried it a couple more times, just simulating a yawn. And every time it gave me that alert, hey, you might be tired. Might be time to take a rest. That's good. That's a good thing. Because driving while you're drowsy, Not safe. It's as bad as driving while you're impaired. I think that Volvo may have gone a little bit too far with the cost cutting on this thing, even though this is not an inexpensive car. You know, as Volvos go, it's relatively inexpensive, but it's, yeah, it's not, it got more annoying the more time I spent with it, having to deal with all these things in the center screen. You know, the driving experience, other than that, was really good. I like the ride quality. It handles really well. I like the fact that it's small. It's great to drive around the city, you know, because it is so small. It's easy to park. And got really good energy efficiency. You know, there again, during the week I was driving it, you know, still the continuing heat wave around here with temperatures, you know, 90 or so with about 900% humidity. So I was driving with the air conditioning on. And then I did a lot of highway driving with it. Even highway driving with the AC on, in high temps, high humidity, it was still getting like 3.5, 3.6 miles per kilowatt hour, which is really good. Part of that you can attribute to the fact that, hey, you know, this is a small car with a relatively small frontal area. But the cargo space, is bigger than what you get behind the third row of a Mitsubishi Outlander.
much though.
I actually could fit my backpack and my rollerboard in the behind the rear seat. Actually, I could have put four roller bags back there. It's big enough for that, and a couple of backpacks. So lots of cargo space. Fun to drive, but be aware that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that you have to control through the touchscreen, which is, I didn't like that. But you can adjust the vents without using the touchscreen. So there's that. You want to guess at the destination charge?
$1,200.
I was going to say $1,495.
Robbie gets it. It was $1,295.
Okay.
The official EPA rated range, for this thing, 253 miles, with a 66 kilowatt hour battery pack. Again, because of a lot of the highway driving that I was doing, high temperatures, air conditioning on, you know, it was probably closer to about 235 or so, was what I would have gotten if I had run it all the way down. Again, in those conditions, I think that's really good. No complaints about it. So, all right, let's move on. There's a bunch of stuff from this week. Let's start off with, do you remember the Lordstown Endurance, which was also a NACTOY finalist?
It was. Yeah. Did you ever drive it, Sam?
I never did get a chance to drive it.
I'm not on NACTOY, so I'm not even going to bring it.
It's, you know what it is? I'll tell you exactly how that happened. The reason is because
everyone's on shrooms.
No, it's we.
Everyone's doing shrooms.
The number of trucks, it's because of the number of trucks there were. If there's not a lot of trucks.
There was only three candidates.
All the trucks will get in. So it was just a year where it lucked out. Had there been more trucks there?
So it was just there.
It was a participation award.
Like if there's like a 100 meter dash at a high school, but only three people show up, like someone's gonna get
everybody gets a medal.
Correct.
Everyone gets a medal. Exactly. It got the bronze because it
so
showed up.
It's not
up.
That hard to figure out what happened.
The third person in that foot race doesn't even have to race. They just walk. and they stop. They eat a sandwich. Maybe they moonwalk over the finish line.
I actually had an appointment to go over to Lordstown offices here in Farmington Hills and drive it and take a drive along with their CEO at the time. And the day before, or a couple days before, their PR person called me up and said, "Yeah, unfortunately, we're going to have to cancel. We'll get you rescheduled." And before that that opportunity got rescheduled, Lordstown was bankrupt and out of business. So,
yeah.
But they did manage apparently to build about 31 of these things before they went belly up, and for some inexplicable reason, Somebody bought one on Bring a Trailer. I have no idea why.
$23,000?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know why.
It's owning a piece of history. If
is it
like the wrapper of a garbage pails like kids pack was owning a piece of history. It's not the actual garbage pail card. It's the wrapper of the garbage pail kids.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this was not a great vehicle by all accounts. Yeah, I mean, somebody will, it'll be an interesting piece of somebody's collection.
Do we have any idea who bought it?
It's
anonymous. Wait, I'm trying to read down here.
Let's not say their name because, you know, they might have friends.
No,
have
I'm just wondering
no,
if it's,
I don't, think it lists who the buyer was.
Who said, like, I bought this because I collect weird crap. Like,
yeah.
No.
Like, yeah, well, rich, clearly it was that was the case.
I would hope so. I hope it wasn't someone who was like, you know what? This was going to be the best when we all knew it was not going to be the best. That it was just another boondoggle from the person who ran Workhorse. Yes.
It does have 1,600 miles on it, so.
They did. Is this the one they just kept driving around CES?
Probably. Probably.
So for a couple years when you went to CES, like Lordstown, even though it was barely a company, would drive around in an Endurance wherever it thought that there would be journalists. And you'd see it. You're like, oh, I'm going to take a picture of this. And then after a while, you're like, nah.
No, I'm not. Not going to do it. Not going to do it.
Like, oh, look, there's that Lordstown truck again.
All right. Let's move on. Subaru had an event in New York on Thursday night.
How was it, Sam?
I wouldn't know. Mother Nature prevented me from getting there. I was supposed to be there. I spent 6-7 hours at Detroit Metro Airport trying to
you
get there.
You spent more time in the airport than it should have taken you to fly there and back.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's a little under a 2-hour flight.
Yeah.
You know, the flight finally got canceled. And when they finally canceled the flight, Delta automatically rebooked me onto another flight the next day. There are flights in the morning from Detroit to New York, but those were all sold out. There was no seats available on any of the morning flights. The earliest flight they could get me on was at 12:30, which was a connecting flight through Columbus, Ohio. And I called the Delta Diamond reservation line and said, yeah, you can't get me on an earlier flight? I said, no, nothing available. I said, well, then forget it. Just cancel because this is, you know, if it's on time, this flight would get me into New York, into LaGuardia about 4:30. The event is at 6:30. Odds are I would miss it. As it turns out, you know, I even though they canceled me, I kept getting the notifications, the flight notifications from Delta. So I was following the progress. The flight from Columbus to LaGuardia ended up getting delayed almost 2 hours anyway.
So you never would have made it.
It didn't land at LaGuardia till about 6:30, which is the time I was supposed to be in Manhattan.
You'd never make it.
If you parachuted out of the plane as it was going, you might have been able to
make it. Maybe have made it in time then.
Yeah. Like, and you pulled the chute like at the very last second.
But, you know.
And you just parachuted into your seat.
I am one of those people that doesn't believe that it's the wise idea to ever jump out of a functional aircraft. I think that's just a dumb thing to do.
All right, then.
But so anyway, they showed off the Subaru Uncharted, which we hinted at last week. Subaru was nice enough to send out the release and the images beforehand. So I didn't get any live images of it, but, you know, we got to look at it. I mean, technically, I had seen this thing in person in May at the Toyota event in Plano, because this is effectively a clone of the Toyota CHR, which, you know, is fine. It, like the Solterra and the Trailseeker, you know, it's exactly identical to the Toyota equivalents, the BZ and the BZ Woodland, and now the CHR, except for the lights. You know, so you get the new Subaru's new signature 6-element headlights and, you know, different taillights on the Subaru versions. But otherwise, it's exactly the same as a CHR, which means that it has 338 horsepower in the all-wheel drive that is expected to make up the bulk of the volume and will be the one they offer first. And then later on, at some point, they are promising to offer a front-wheel drive version, single-motor front-wheel drive with, I think, 220-ish horsepower.
Which is weird, but sure.
Yeah. Which would actually probably make it, I think, the only current Subaru that is available without all-wheel drive.
The BRZ.
Oh, the BRZ, yeah. Okay, so it'd be the only front-wheel drive.
Front-wheel drive. I think the last front-wheel drive Subaru was like the 90s, the 80s,
yeah.
1900s, wow. Something like that. It's been a while.
The CHR, we don't know how much it's going to cost. We know it's supposed to arrive sometime in the first part of 2026. It's going to be built in Japan, which is part of why we don't know how much it's going to cost, because who knows what the tariff rates will be.
Who knows?
Next year.
Tomorrow, or to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. The all-wheel drive version is supposed to get about 290 miles of range. The front-wheel drive one should do a little over 300. So 338 horsepower, 90 miles of range, not too shabby.
No.
290 miles of range, not too shabby at all.
Still 400 volt, which means 150 charging, which is kind of a bummer. But you know, what are you gonna do?
But it's a lot better than when they first launched the Solterra and the BZ.
That was embarrassing for a company that's known for for both of those companies, to be honest.
It does have a NACS charging port, which is on the right front fender and the passenger side front fender, which means that you should be able to reach the nice and short Tesla supercharger cables without taking up an extra parking space. What else? I think it's a pretty decent looking vehicle.
Yeah,
it does.
Cool.
It looks pretty.
Looking
good.
Forward to trying it out.
I like how it looks.
Yeah. All right. What else? Let's see. As long as we're talking Subaru, another short one. You remember the Trail Seeker?
Yes.
When we saw that at the New York Auto Show in April, it's like they showed us the Trail Seeker, which looked like what we would expect a new Outback to look like. And then they showed us the new Outback, which was something else entirely. In Europe, they're not going to use the Trail Seeker name. They're actually calling what we know as the Trail Seeker the e-Outback.
I like that. E-Outback.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, just give everything names. Don't have to. Stop with the
stop with the E. You don't want E's anymore?
Just call it the EQS thing, the e-tron thing. I think we've moved past it. Let's just, like, what is this? This is the name of a car. It doesn't have to have... Don't like, hey, it's the electric, blah, blah, blah. Just call it whatever it is. I guess e-Outback. Doesn't make sense because the Outback looks completely different. So now you're up to one car that doesn't even look like the gas version of the car.
Yeah.
I don't know. Branding, yo.
All right. Let's move on. GM, when they discontinued the Bolt back in 2023, they promised us a new Bolt coming by the end of 2025, and they told us that it would have LFP batteries, lithium iron phosphate batteries, which are significantly less expensive than the nickel-rich batteries that they use on all their other EVs. Well, they confirmed again this week that that car is still on track to launch this year, and it will have LFP batteries. But those LFP batteries will be from a supplier that they have not yet named. But GM also announced that they're going to produce their own LFP cells with LG at the Spring Hill Ultium Cells LLC factory in Tennessee. That's going to take until 2027 before they're ready to produce those, because they've got to convert over some of the production equipment to running LFP instead of nickel-rich cells. They will be producing their own LFP cells in Spring Hill, and presumably at some point after that production starts, those will go into Bolts, and they'll certainly go into other vehicles from GM as well.
All right.
They haven't given us much more detail other than that, other than where it's going to be produced and when. But
they're coming over.
Yeah. So do you remember Nuro? Did you guys ever seen the Nuro delivery vehicles, the autonomous delivery vehicles?
I don't remember those. Nuro?
It's a Silicon Valley startup. It was started by some ex-Waymo guys.
Okay.
And they were doing this little no passenger delivery vehicle. It had two compartments in it. It was autonomous to do last mile deliveries, to deliver groceries and meals from restaurants and things like that. Well, last fall, Nuro announced that they were giving up on developing that vehicle. And instead, they were just going to focus on developing their software for production and offering it to other companies. Well, they announced a deal this week with Uber and Lucid. Uber is going to invest $300 million into Lucid and Nuro. And they're going to build robo-taxis, premium robo-taxis, with the Nuro driver system based on the Lucid Gravity.
All right.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big station wagon anyway, so.
Yeah.
Might as well. And I tell Lucid, I said, you know what? I don't think Lucid marketing doesn't care. I think everyone else at Lucid is like, yeah, that's fine.
They're like, yeah, sure, cool. We'll go with it.
Yeah, whatever.
As long as people buy them. They just want people to buy them. They don't care what you call it. Just buy them, please.
It's a great car.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
We've all driven. Did you drive it, Nicole?
The Lucid,
Gravity?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
Gravity.
Good. All right.
Yes.
I didn't want to make, say things.
No,
for you.
I did.
I'm like, we've all driven it. And Nicole's like, I didn't drive it.
I drove it.
Wait, were we on the same drive program?
I was with Sam.
Yeah.
Oh. But were we all together?
I don't know.
I think you were the day before us.
I was a different wave. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just with other people. Okay, now I remember.
But Nicole had to leave early to fly. That was when you went to the Cupra thing, right?
I think I went right to a Cupra thing, yes.
Yeah.
I just remember
because you had to fly because you came from Boston to Santa Barbara and then went from Santa Barbara to Miami and then back to San Diego for the Navigator.
Yes. I just zipped back and forth across the country and remember that I was timed so tight getting out of Jeep that they literally made me a little pizza, shoved it in a box, and handed to me a cookie, got to the airport. And I sat there eating a little pizza in the back of the car. It was really good.
I'm so jealous of the little pizza.
Yeah, the little pizza in a little box.
Yeah, they had pizza.
At the lunch stop, they had this portable wood-fired pizza thing.
It's really good.
Oh, yeah. Those were great.
Yeah.
Weren't those great?
That was a really good drive program.
I know, right? I'm like, how was the car? I don't know. The pizza was amazing.
I've been in 3 Michelin star restaurants in Germany and other Michelin star restaurants around the world, and those pizzas were like probably better than 90% of them.
It was a really good pizza. It was
One year Porsche had us go up north and the restaurant didn't even serve Mexican food. They just like had one of like, hey, can we get tacos and pozole? And it was the best. And it wasn't even what that restaurant made. They're just like, people want tacos and pozole.
I had tacos this afternoon. We found a new taco place.
Yeah.
That we didn't know. And somebody was asking about the best tacos and we went there and it was amazing. It was like, they were the best tacos in town.
There you go.
Very good.
Everything's gone off the rails. Sorry, everybody.
Sorry, tacos.
Fault.
Go ahead. Well, what were you saying?
If you're in Ypsilanti, there's a taco truck that parks on Washtenaw Avenue in front of the O'Reilly's Auto Parts in the parking lot there. Really good tacos there and burritos.
Oh, and you can get new windshield wipers.
Now, every person listening to the show is having tacos for dinner now tonight. There's a significant others might not know, but they're about to come home and go, we're having tacos.
I'm going to have I had tacos last night after our show. They had a taco truck there. It was the best because they opened at midnight.
I love the chorizo tacos they do at this taco truck over here.
That sounds good.
All right, sorry.
Anyway.
Sorry.
The Range Rover Electric was supposed to debut later this year. It's shockingly, it's been pushed back until 2026.
I'm so surprised.
Yeah.
That's fine.
We don't know exactly when in 2026. It's been delayed. And, according to AutoCar, that may also affect, the new Jaguar electric models.
Also shocked.
Yeah. Whatever. Those companies don't have, they don't, A, they don't do huge, huge numbers. B, they're you know, it's JLR. They're not doing great. So if you have to push something back, that's fine. I want an electric Defender, a 90. So essentially Defender no one buys, and I also want it to be electric.
Okay. Sounds like a solid strategy.
So if they're going to do, I mean, if they're going to push it back, you know, might as well just build that as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone I could talk to about that.
Sounds like a good strategy. All right. Let's see. Volkswagen. You know, one of the concerns a lot of people have about EVs is the battery life. You know, how long is the battery going to last? You know, am I going to buy this thing and have to replace the battery after 2 years? And the answer to that basically is no. They recently did some testing. ADAC did some testing in Germany. It's the roadside assistance company, so it's kind of like AAA in Germany. They did some testing on a VW ID.3 that had 100,000 miles on it, and they found that after 100,000 miles, the 77 kilowatt hour battery pack still had 91% of its original capacity. Hmm. So, unless you're buying an old Leaf, an air cooled battery Nissan Leaf, basically you don't really have to worry too much about the battery dying. You know, I mean, within the typical lifespan of the car, it's generally going to last.
I think people don't realize that, like, as you own your car, your gas car, like, its mileage, like, its miles per gallon actually deteriorates over time. Like, you know, unless you keep it pristine, which absolutely no one can. That's, like, impossible unless you, you know, work at the Ford dealership and you're working on it every week. Over time, the mileage, your miles per gallon actually goes down.
Yeah. And, you know, parts start to fall off and all kinds of bad stuff happens.
And then stuff falls off. Like, oh, no. Oh. Yeah, the drive shaft? Oh. Yeah,
you know, and most manufacturers, you know, give you a 100,000-mile warranty on the battery. You know, and if your capacity drops below 70% within 100,000 miles, you know, they'll replace the battery. You know, this was still at 91% after 100,000 miles. And similar tests in the past, you know, found similar results, you know, that you might lose maybe 1 or 2% capacity per year. And usually you have, you know, at least 85% to 90% capacity after 100,000 miles. So yeah, don't use that as an excuse not to buy an EV. There's lots of reasons why you might not want to buy an EV. That's not one of them.
You can't charge at home. There's no charging infrastructure where you live.
Unless it's a Leaf with an air-cooled battery, in which case...
Unless it's a... Yeah, then, yeah.
That's a whole other story.
That's
a...
Yeah, yeah.
So, last week, Nicole, you and I went to Montreal.
We did.
And, you know, that was also a heavily delayed flight for me. That was like 12 hours late getting into Montreal.
Yeah, yours were the worst. I was about 5 hours, 4 or 5. You barely made it.
Yeah. So why did we go to Montreal?
We went to Montreal to drive a new car that isn't really out yet here, but it's coming, the Polestar 4 SUV, which we can't give any drive impressions about, but we can talk about aside from drive impressions. That was the rule. So you can say anything you want except for whether or not you like the way it drives.
So, you wrote an article for Top Speed about things you love and hate about the Polestar 4.
I did write an article. So like, there's good things and bad things about every car, and there were things that I really liked about this. Like, one of the things we discovered was that it has this head-up display that normally it's white, you know, and it has a snow-ready head-up display. It changes to yellow in snow mode, so that you can see it against a really bright white background. I thought that, hey, that's cool. It has this huge panoramic roof that has the electrochromic film. I was going to say it wrong. So you can change it from slightly shadowed, like sort of tinted almost slightly, so the sun isn't too bright, but you still have light in, or just full on sunlight. Also really cool. It does not have a rear window, which I thought was going to be horrible, but no. Lack of rear windows, okay. And the dynamic camera mirror. So they have this camera mirror, which a lot of places have, but this one, when you hit your turn signals, it ever so slightly tips the view left when you put your left turn signal on and right when you put your right turn signal on. And they have this really beautiful, like, textured interior. It's got all these neat textures on it, all these cool ways that they made fabric and upholstery. It's really cool. But there was one thing I hated, Sam. I hated
it. What could that possibly be?
They put the vent controls in the infotainment screen. Again, why must they do this? Why? Like, why? It's like deal breaker territory for me. I don't like that. I just give me an actual dang vent control that's physical that I can grab.
Before we actually went out and drove it, we had a presentation. Yes. They did a virtual presentation with some of their subject matter experts from Polestar in Gothenburg. So they were live streamed in to the room, and we got to do a Q&A. And I asked the question during the Q&A why they did this. And they spent about 3 or 4 minutes talking, trying to justify this.
No, it was, people like to have things in there and it's better and it's easy and it's clean and it's nice and we did it and you'll love it. And I'm like, no, I won't. Can I tell you the funniest part about that? So that was last week. This previous week, I was in Detroit to check out some new Kia vehicles. We didn't drive and there was no embargoes on any of the information that we saw. It was the EV4 and the K4. And in the EV4, you've got physical vent controls. And they specifically mentioned during the presentation, we didn't put them in the infotainment screen because they need to be easy and accessible. So their whole thing was, and I asked them about it, I said, why didn't you? I asked their product planning guy, why did you not, when other companies are, why did you think it wasn't a good idea to put it in infotainment? He's like, well, honestly, he said, especially, you know, for people who were the very early adopters, they're fine with futzing around with random weirdness in a car. They like new technology. They like new stuff. They're a little willing to deal with stuff for the privilege of having the latest and greatest. But people buying EVs now don't want that. They want it to be just like their car, just like their regular car, with all the things as easy to use as they ever were. And he said that includes the vents. He said, so we just left the vents controls physical because that is the easiest way to control them. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to look for it. They're right there. It's like, huzzah, go Kia. But they did not do that at Polestar, and they give us this whole line of...
A lot of nonsense.
They do it. It was nonsense. It was just so funny that I got that at Polestar, and then at Kia's going, heck no, we're not doing that.
All right. Anything else you want to say about Polestar 4?
Without talking about the drive impressions. I mean, it's a really cool looking car. The interior's neat and the rear window looks really neat that you don't have one and it's just metal. And I thought it would look really weird close up, but you don't even inside, you don't even see it. When you just look inside the door, you don't really notice it's not there, which is some kind of freaky design thing they did with how they made the panoramic glass come far enough back and how they positioned things. So it actually doesn't make the car dark and feel like a cave, like you kind of expect. But.
Yeah, well, you know, the Volvo C40, you know, which is the coupe-ish version of the XC40, that one has a rear window, but it also has a sloping rear back like the Polestar 4. Mm-hmm. And so from the driver's seat, when you look in the mirror, you know, between the headrests, you know, in the back seat and, you know, this really sloping rear glass, you basically have like a little slot that you see through anyway. So it's pretty much useless in terms of visibility. So yeah, I'm fine with just get rid of the glass entirely. And you know, then you have, you know, an enclosed storage area, cargo area that nobody can see into to steal your stuff from and just use the digital mirror.
Well, and they put the digital mirror. It's neat. The cameras for it are very high up. Like, they're not low. Like, sometimes cameras are lower. They're sort of like on the tailgate or like the lift gate on an SUV. So it's easy for them to get dirty and gross, especially I'd imagine during winter or whatever. This one is up in the top. It's like where your little antenna is for your radio. It's right up there. So it's high enough that it's kind of out of the way. And we were driving on a sunny day and who knows, but it feels like it would be much better for in winter weather to not get mucky. So you'll still be able to see and not have to worry about it getting really dirty.
Yeah. Let's go back to Volvo. You know, they're also owned by Geely, as is Polestar. And Volvo's been having some challenges of late. The EX90, not selling in huge numbers yet. You know, some of the other cars, you know, their sales have been down. So they're making some adjustments, because of the tariffs. You know, right now the only car they produce the only car they sell that's produced in the U.S. is the EX90, which, you know, is pretty small volume still. The rest of their vehicles come from either Europe or China. And because of the tariffs, right now, they've decided to pare back their U.S. lineup. And they are discontinuing sales of the, the S90, I think, or the, which one is it? I'm trying to remember now.
S60. X60 already stopped production. And the S90 is stopped.
Yeah, because those they were getting from China, from their factory in China. And so those are being dropped from the U.S. lineup. And then they are also adjusting some of their production strategy. Their factory in Charleston, South Carolina, or outside of Charleston, is currently producing the Polestar 3 and the EX90. And it's also scheduled to add the EX60 next year. But now they announced this week that they're also going to add production of the XC60 because they're keeping that around longer. All of the gas-powered models were gradually supposed to go away over the next few years as they were planning to go all electric. That's not quite happening, at least not on the same schedule. So they're keeping the XC60 around, and they're going to start building those in South Carolina next year for the U.S. market. And then they also... Yeah. Last year they did a refresh of the XC90, and they were not planning to do a third generation XC90, but that plan has changed. And so now they are going to do a new XC90, which is going to be based on the XC70 that we talked about a few weeks back, which is an extended range plug-in hybrid, which has about, I think it's about 70 or 80 miles of electric range. And so that's going to be coming sometime later this decade.
A lot of shuffling. I think we all knew that that was going to be really hard for Volvo to do what they needed to do when the tariffs and started. I think everyone knew it's going to be hard for all the OEMs, but especially for Volvo. So it's unfortunate. I think that's making this exceptionally tough for them to stay competitive in this market.
And then, back in January when we were at CES, you, Nicole, and Rebecca Lindland and I, went to a little offsite briefing with the folks from Faraday Future.
We did.
Yeah. We got a look at, their plans for Faraday X, their new lower cost sub brand.
First of all, there's no higher cost anything.
Well, no, there's the FF91, which, you know, at the time they told us, you know, when I asked, how many of those have you actually delivered? He said, about 13 or 14.
13 or 14.
Didn't even know for sure how many. Now, apparently, they're saying like 16 or 17.
Oh, wow.
So when I went to their HQ in Fullerton, doesn't matter, L.A., they had 12 mules, so I really think those
Yeah, probably. They're probably counting those.
Yeah. Yeah.
They showed us what they were planning next, you know, for Faraday X. And the first was this Chinese-designed van, a luxury van. And they told us that their goal was to take on the Cadillac Escalade in the livery market. You know, they think that there's going to be demand for vehicles like this. Because these kinds of vans, these luxury vans, are very popular in China and in other parts of Asia. They're pretty big in Korea and in Japan.
If you get a fancy van, if you get a fancy car like to drive you around in Japan or Korea, it's going to be a van. And it's amazing because they're like they're like lazy boy recliners in there. They're awesome.
And that's what we sat in. Yeah, we got to go for a short ride around the parking lot outside the building where they were doing the briefing for us.
The
car was all camoed. We got to try out these fancy seats. Well, the other day they had this event in Los Angeles to officially unveil what they've now badged as the Faraday X Super One. What do you think?
What is the screen thing? This is what I'm. And I think I'm more perplexed than I actually when I saw it. I still have confusion.
Well,
I still have confusion.
The ones that we saw in January did not have the screen. So the place where you would normally find a grill on the front fascia of the car is a giant LCD display. And it can put all kinds of messages on there. And one of the problems with this is that I remember like several years ago when GM, back in 2020, when GM did their EV day and they showed us, you know, all these EVs they were planning to build. And I asked the question, you know, because like on the Cadillacs, you know, they have, all this lighting on the front and they had the Cadillac logo, you know, backlit and everything was in white on the front. And I asked, you know, why not have some color in the Cadillac logo? He said, well, legally, you're not allowed to. You're only, apart from the turn signals, you're only allowed to have white lighting on the front. And this display that they put on the Super One definitely shows a lot more color. So not quite sure how they're going to get around that.
I mean, they don't have to make the car. That's the thing with Faraday. They've been around for, I don't know, 700-800 years at this point. They don't have to actually sell anything. They just got to keep moving the money around.
That's true.
Moving the money. It's like Lordstown with deeper pockets.
Yeah, they keep managing to find somebody to throw money at their projects. I don't know why anyone would actually give them any money after all the success that they've had so far. I remember being at that first event at CES in 2017 when they showed the FF91 for the first time. Were you there at that one, Robbie?
That was the one in the giant tent outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a big old interview with them. I did a big old piece on that article, on that event.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was a two-hour-long press conference that they did, which included about a minute and a half of video of just moving dirt around on the site of what was supposed to be their factory in North Las Vegas, which obviously never came to pass. But we got to see a couple minutes of just moving dirt around.
It's pretty exciting.
Yeah. lots of hyperbole in Faraday announcements. They're big on the hyperbole.
They did have the car take off from inside the tent. They had like a little, like a drag race of it.
Yeah, they had a drag race with an FF91 and a Ferrari, I think.
Like, once it went out of the room, though, we don't know what happened. Like, we didn't see the whole thing. It's just like, it went. So it might have gone out the door and then just fell apart. And, like, it turned to dust, like, at the end of, like, an Avengers movie.
Well, there was the one that they pulled out at one point that was on display after the press conference was over. And if you remember, it was up right up against the back wall. And it turns out the reason why it was pressed right up against the back wall is because the left rear corner was not done. It was missing parts. And so they parked it right up against the wall
gosh.
So people couldn't really see it. Yeah. But yeah, but it's funny reading reading some of the materials from this event on Thursday. Let's see. In the invitation to this is from Jalopnik. In the invitation to the FX Super One's reveal, which I attended on Thursday night, the company described it as the world's first AI-powered luxury MPV and a true disruptor in the electric era, and said the event would also feature the Super EAI FACE front AI communication ecosystem and the new FF EAI 6x4 architecture, which are core to Faraday Future's new tech and product direction. You know,
what was the old tech and old product direction?
Who the hell knows? This all sounds like it was just generated out of ChatGPT or something.
Well, they do use AI. It's the EAI 6x4 architecture, PR marketing word salad producer 2000.
Yeah,
what it is?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you talk to people from, and this has always been the case, when you talk to people from Faraday Future, you know, it's always been a lot of nonsense. It was funny in the video, the Instagram video that was posted, that's embedded in this Jalopnik story. It's in the show notes. They show when they actually went to pull the silk off these two things, and one of them, I guess they had driven over the silk, and so it was stuck under the tire, and they couldn't get the silk off the car.
That's
the most on-brand Faraday thing.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
On Monday I was at Tuesday I was at an event here in Detroit, and I saw Stephanie Brindley, and she was actually supposed to go to this thing. She was supposed to fly out on Wednesday. I haven't talked to her since. I don't know if she actually got out there or not, but she was supposed to be at this. She said, you know, they really want you to come out here, you know, to see this. And I guess out of a couple hundred people that were at this event, there was only a small handful of actual media and, mm-hmm. and analysts, and, you know, then a whole bunch of influencers and investors.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, that's all there. Everything is like, I think my article about CES is all how Faraday was trying to impress investors. I think that was the headline. Like, Faraday is impressing investors or some goofiness. So many years ago.
Yeah.
Man, that was so long ago. I rode to that in a Mahindra electric scooter. I had one to ride around all through CES. It was the best. That was the best thing, and they don't sell the scooters anymore here in the United States. But I love that thing. I rode that thing all over CES. I was living the dream.
Sweet. All right. Last story for this week. Ford has an electric Bronco, but you can't have it. Wah-wah. It's only for China.
Aww.
I was not able to find anything about this on the Ford China media site, which doesn't appear to have been updated since sometime in early 2024.
Okay.
they haven't applied the new from the road media site strategy to the Chinese media site at this point. There was several articles this week, including this one in the Utopian. This is a completely different vehicle from either the Bronco or Bronco Sport that they sell here in North America. It has some of the Bronco styling cues on it, which actually doesn't look bad. And they're going to offer this as an EV and as an extended range EV, as an EREV. So it'll have an engine generator to keep the battery charged up.
It looks good. I like how it looks. It doesn't matter because they're never going to get it. But it actually looks really good. I like the colors. Are these actual production colors? I like that sort of burgundy-ish one. It's pretty slick looking.
Yeah.
I approve.
Yeah, I like it too. It's built as part of Ford's joint venture with Jiangling. And it's based on one of Jiangling's platforms. So it doesn't share anything with the Broncos that we get here.
So it just says Bronco. And then they're like, well, we got extra. We got some Bronco Sport stuff. We got some Bronco stuff. You know what? We have some random panels.
Well, the EREV version is supposed to have 135 miles of electric range, which is probably on the China light-duty test cycle, which means it's probably closer to about 75 or 80 miles. But still, you know, 75, 80 miles of electric range, and then a 1.5 liter turbo for the range extender. So that would be pretty slick.
Yeah, no. We all got to go to China now.
Yep. All right. Let's answer a couple of listener questions. First up, let's do Roxy. Roxy had a question specifically for you, Robbie. Your thoughts about buying a used Kona EV as a second around town car? Are there any model years that you would recommend over others?
Oh, let me think. What year did we have? Was it a 2021? 2022? There was a mid-cycle refresh that made the vehicle it was the last refresh of the current of the last generation. That's the one we had, and it was just a better car than the car before it. You know, if you're going to get that, especially if for around the car around town, literally, I think any of the Kona EVs would be fine, to be honest. Because if you're not, you know, I think the charging rate was 76 on the one we had. It might have been 60 something before that. So if you're just going to plug it in at home and you need to cruise around town, I mean, that's pretty much what we did with that vehicle for 3 years, is we just drove it around town. The only time we took it to the charging station, my wife took it once because she was going to visit her friend who lived a couple hundred miles away. And then I used it once when I went to Monterey Car Week in it. And then other than that, the only time we used to charge it was A, to show my wife how to use the charging station, and B, to use up all the free charging that we had been given that we hadn't used. So the last couple of months of having a car, I kept taking it to EA station. I'm like, there's all this free electricity. I got to use all the free electricity. So other than that, we just plugged it in at night. We got up. It had 250 something miles of range. Yeah, no, it's good. Great little car. Lots of room. I mean, yeah, you're going to spin those front wheels a lot, though, if you're not careful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a decent
amount of power. It's 250 kilowatts, so 201 horsepower. It came out, I think it launched in the U.S. in 2019. And then in 21, I think, was when they did the refresh.
It refreshed on a Wednesday, and we bought it on a Friday. we didn't know it was going to do a refresh. We were just going to get it. And then the refresh, they announced it, and they were already in dealerships.
Nice.
It was, yeah. So in just like, well, I guess we're just buying this refreshed version. So, yeah, it worked out great for us.
Yeah. I drove the Kona EV a couple different times, and I always liked it. I thought it was a fun little car. And I still like the looks of the first generation Kona better than the current one. It's smaller. The back seat's tighter, but, Roxy just wants to use it as a second around town car. So, yeah, sounds like a plan. Probably if you get any of them, you're probably going to be fine.
You can put a German Shepherd and a tiny German Shepherd in the back seat, and it'll be fine.
Okay. That's all you need.
That's literally all we for our cars. What can I put? Can I put a guitar amp and a guitar back there? Yeah. Can I put a German Shepherd in the back? Yeah. That's all we need to know.
Good enough.
Carry on.
All right. The other question we got this week was from Anthony. It says, love the podcast. Look forward to every episode. I'm a two-time Genesis GV60 owner. Given that the GV60 hasn't been around that long, it seems a little odd. But anyway.
Leases, probably? They have two-year leases with
them. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I bought an advanced trim during the pandemic and really liked it, but swooned for the Ioniq 6 design, trading the Genesis after a year for the newer and longer-range Ioniq 6. However, I miss the delightfully charming luxury of the GV60, not to mention the much more comfortable and smooth ride. I never valued suspension until I experienced the difference on a daily commute. I really appreciate Nicole's great review of the GV60 on this and other podcasts. I bought a used performance trim and stare at it almost as much as I smile inside it. The question is, where are the emergency door releases on all four doors? Hopefully it's in the same place as Sam's new EV6. I can't find the location or even a mention of it in the owner's manual. Ooh, that's a good question.
I'm actually, this whole time you guys have been talking about the
Did you
Robbie,
find it?
I can't find it, guys. I'm looking everywhere and I cannot find, I'm Googling like crazy and I can't find it. I didn't see this question earlier. I would have searched it earlier, but I can find no mention of the, there has to be one, right? It's a mechanical door lock. I mean, an electronic door lock, right?
Yeah.
On the GV60. I can't find it. I don't know if one of you guys can.
Let's see. I found the Genesis GV60 emergency rescue manual.
Oh.
This is for first responders. Let's see if
I found the first responders one where it tells me how to like disconnect the things
For immobilization, for jacking it up, disable direct hazards, disable direct hazards, disable direct hazards. A lot of that.
We're
access
have to
the occupants. How to open the door manually. When airbags are deployed, the door handles pop out automatically, but the door handles may not pop out under certain conditions. So you push the front side inwards, rear side of the door. Yeah, okay, that's fine.
That's from the outside.
That's from the outside.
I keep seeing outside stuff. I'm trying to find inside stuff and failing.
This is why we just need doors. I had a whole...
Right.
I picked up the guitarist for my band at BART to go to the show yesterday. And, you know, the Ioniq 5, the doors pop out, you know, when you unlock them. Uh-huh. He's like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, we just mechanical doors. I don't know what we're doing with all these ridiculous electric doors. Just let's just have some mechanical doors.
And like, so many of them have like a little latch. It's either sometimes like underneath it or it can be right next. Like, I can't find it. I'm going to keep looking. I feel like I'm looking at the
Genesis owners forum where somebody asked this exact question.
Did anyone figure it out?
The passenger doors are mechanical. Just pull the release handle.
Oh, okay. So they're actually they're mechanical from the inside, but they're electronic from the outside.
Oh, are they just mechanical from the inside?
That's what it looks like.
All right. Let me see. I was really concerned.
I'm like, what's happening?
I probably have those same doors.
Integrated door handle. I know. Now I'm looking at a map.
Sam and I are living on borrowed time. Turns out it's fine. We're fine. We're fine. We'll be fine. We're going to be okay. They're mechanical.
Yeah, this looks like just a mechanical handle, which means that's all you need. Even if you don't have power, that's all. It'll still open.
Yeah, I think it is. It does look
like
mechanical.
I was thinking it was an electronic. One of the electronic ones is just like a little button. Those have a release. If we're not wrong in remembering, I drive a lot of cars, I'm trying to remember exactly what the inside looks like. But even looking at this, it's just a physical release.
I just pulled it up. And it looks like it's just a mechanical latch. So
all right, so the electric part is just where it plops it out, but if you really push into that, you can pull those open as well.
Because like our EV6 doesn't have the powered door handles.
Mm-hmm.
So you push in the front edge and it back end pops out and pull it. If you're outside we're trying to figure out, like my wife has been used to driving the Honda Civic, which had automatic unlocking when you walk up to it with the key fob in your pocket or purse, and it automatically locked when you walk away from it. And it wasn't doing either of those things. And I found out that you unlock it. If you have the key fob on you, if you press the back edge of the door handle in a little bit, and you'll hear it click and unlock the doors, and then you pull it out and you can open the door. So you don't have to take the key fob out and press the button. So you just push the back edge of the door handle. And then for automatic locking when you walk away, it turns out that for some reason Hyundai and Kia don't have that. But I found, and I'll put a link to this, I found there's a guy online. He does a YouTube channel called Ioniq Guy. And he had figured this out a couple of years ago. When he got his Ioniq 5, figured out how to get it to automatically lock when you walk away. Basically, you tap into one of the CAN bus lines in the car, and he designed a little circuit board that when it's connected to the CAN bus lines, when it detects you walking away from the car with the key fob, after a few seconds, it will automatically lock the doors. And the original version, and the version that he still sells for some of the EGMP models, it comes with a couple of T-taps, and you actually have to tap in, go under the front passenger seat and tap into one of the CAN bus lines to hook it up. On the EV6, if it has the trailer wiring package built in, which ours does, then there's a connector in the rear cargo area on the left-hand side. There's a little access panel. You pop that up, and there's a connector sitting there, and you can connect onto that. So he actually 3D prints a connector, because you can't actually buy the matching connector for it. So he 3D prints a connector and puts the terminals in there, got a little circuit board, it's got a 3D printed case for it. You just plug that in and tape the little module inside this compartment, put the panel back on, and it locks when you walk away from the car. It's perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Bam.
All right, so getting out of the car, if you lose power in GV60, no problem. Just pull the door handle, just as it should be.
Phew. All three of us are going to live.
I'm panicking for a minute. I'm like, where is this?
All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Let's see.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor. And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo brownie fusion, Pop-Tarts strawberry fusion, strawberry swirl, brownie batter swirl, caramel swirl, and caramel crunch fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC. Used with permission.